The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Nau mai, haere mai, planet people. This is Kev Energy, and copping it left, right, and centre as COP30 pans out or explodes out, depending on your point of view. NZ's cop out on COP30 has been well covered in the conversation, and this is available at NZ-newsletter at theconversation.com. A beautiful edition that covers so many wide aspects, and I highly recommend it. So here it is. Nau mai, haere mai. During the past few weeks, the government has already announced a suite of changes that suggest their lack of ambition to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Cuts of a thousand natures. But just a few days before COP30, the UN Climate Summit, currently underway in Brazil, of course, it started dismantling the New Zealand's landmark climate law that was bipartisanship agreed under the previous regime. As Catherine Dyer writes, the most significant of these proposed legal changes is a decoupling of domestic efforts to cut emissions from New Zealand's pledge under the Paris Agreement. This is like taking a Kiwi Rail train and just say, we'll take out the last 10 carriages, so let's just decouple it and see what happens. New Zealand's 2030 international pledge can only be met if roughly half is covered through investing in emissions-cutting projects in other countries, or by purchasing offsets on the international carbon market, or stop using coal at home to that degree. Discussions at COP30 are expected to advance international carbon markets, providing the policy tools required for New Zealand to keep its promise. But our correspondent Catherine Dyer writes and argues the government appears to be trying to shut the door on it. Delinking the emissions trading scheme, one of the few remaining policy tools for cutting domestic emissions from the country's Paris Agreement pledge, constructs a pathway for the government to abandon its international obligations while remaining compliant with domestic law, trying to isolate themselves or ring-fence themselves. It's going against history. She further says these latest changes follow the repeal of the oil and gas ban and announcements of a new energy policy that doubles down on fossil fuels, trying to keep them up. Fossil fuels come out of the ground, renewables come down from the sky. Work it out. She says a weakened climate-related financial disclosure regime and a shift in New Zealand's methane target to its lowest possible ambition, even although it is inconsistent with the global goal of limiting the warming to 1.5 degrees. Let's have a look at this in a bit more depth. Catherine Dyer is a lecturer in climate change at Te Rengo Waka, that's Victoria University of Wellington, and she has no pecuniary interest in the outcome of the articles. So as this year's UN Climate Summit gets underway in Belém, the New Zealand delegation will be attending beneath a cloud of scepticism about the government's seriousness in addressing carbon emissions. And as we talk this, Simon Watts is winging his way to New York to try and peddle his bad woes. In a late-night announcement last week, the government proposed changes to New Zealand's landmark climate law, including a decoupling of domestic efforts to cut emissions from the New Zealand's pledge under the Paris Agreement. Delinking the emissions trading scheme, one of the few remaining policy tools for cutting emissions from the Paris Agreement's pledge, constructs a pathway for the government to abandon its international obligations, but while still remaining compliant with domestic law. That's like a policeman policing the policeman. We know what happened in other avenues of the police regime just recently. The retort from the market was immediate, as markets do. The price of New Zealand carbon units plummeted 10% once trading resumed on the morning after the announcement, and further crashed by 18% at the end of the day. So disincentive to invest in the carbon market is a given. She goes on to say, having earlier promised to let the market do its work, the government's move was described by Carbon News as a brutal blow to confidence in an already, moribund market. New Zealand's current promise to the world is a 2030 pledge under the Paris Agreement, known as Nationally Determined Contribution, or NDC, is to cut greenhouse emissions by 50% compared to 2005 levels 20 years ago. According to the latest figures from the Climate Change Commission, again, you can get this in the article with very good links, roughly half of this target would have to be met through investing in emissions-cutting projects in other countries or by purchasing offsets on international carbon markets. So do the maths. Cut that, and of course you can't cut your emissions. So now you could you're compliant domestically, but not internationally. We're not an island on our own. New Zealand's high reliance on international offsets makes it more exposed to global carbon pricing than any other OECD country. Despite acknowledging the potentially significant cost thereof, Treasury has never accounted for offshore mitigation in its financial statements, arguing the government might change its policy settings, almost like leading by the nose. Ministers have previously expressed the government's unwillingness to purchase international offsets, claiming the idea was not palatable without providing any clear alternatives. Talk about muddying the waters. Attempting to avoid further reliance on international offsets, the NZ government made the smallest possible progression on the 2030 target in its proposal for New Zealand's 2035 target, promising to cut our net emissions by 51 to 55% on 2005 levels. Well, this is like a farmer sitting on both sides of the fence. Between 51 and 55? Nah, maybe, if so, whatever. The article goes on to say, even on the basis of domestic emissions reductions alone, the target has been widely criticised as unambitious. Discussions at the COP30 are expected to advance implementation of international carbon markets. So the world's moving ahead and New Zealand's going backwards. And providing the policy tools required for an NZ to meet its 2030 Paris Agreement target. In this latest move, the government appears to be trying to shut the door on it. And there are plenty of people pushing on the other side. Simon Watts, in his policy advice to Cabinet ahead of the recent announcement, claimed New Zealand's emissions trading scheme is a domestic policy instrument that should be made to align solely with domestic targets. Of course, once you cut them, it's not too hard to meet them, and despite originally being designed explicitly to link with international markets. So included in this announcement was a plan to weaken NZ target for methane emissions from livestock. And as we know, we've got one of the highest emission amounts per capita in the world, because we feed the world, but we do need to be compliant with the world outcomings. This goes against the Triple C's Commission's advice, which proposed stronger cuts. So instead, the government presented calculations from a separate expert panel it appointed with narrow terms of reference, including a predetermined target formula. It's like walking the tightrope. This means that unless all sectors step up, New Zealand will struggle to meet domestic targets and the gap with Paris Agreement will widen like a ship on a rudderless ship going on its own direction. The article says the removal of the means to achieving climate goals amounts to a soft renege on the Paris Agreement that has potentially significant consequences. Okay, let's look at the consequences of the retreat. The government's latest proposal changes to climate law dismantle much of New Zealand's remaining climate policy architecture, which had been painstakingly enacted with bipartisan support. There's so few bipartisan support packages in this government between Labor and New Zealand, First and National. And here's a bipartisan breakdown. So that's to ensure stability around crucial long-term goals. The Climate Change Response, in brackets Zero Carbon Amendment Act in 2009, enshrined the long-term targets and established the Climate Change Commission therefrom. To secure bipartisan support for the Act, the implementation of the Commission's advice was made optional. The compromise imposed a requirement for governments to at least seek the Commission's advice, at bare minimum, it said, when setting targets and to provide the public with an explanation if it chose to depart from that advice. This created a transparency about the government's actions and encouraged accountability to the public. So this wasn't just the national government, but all governments, signatory to their... So eliminating some of the commission's advice has one guaranteed outcome. The public will be less informed on the robustness of the government's mitigation plans or its progress toward meeting the country's international obligations. A double cut, a double sword. Goes on to say, failure to meet these obligations could do immeasurable harm to New Zealand's international reputation. And Mr. Luxon, that is, means less trade, which means more money out from going elsewhere. What part of money don't you understand? It says, while undermining free trade agreements that include clauses requiring those targets to be met. Commitments, no less. Even if the coalition is no longer in government in 2030, getting the government back on track to meeting its Paris Agreement obligations will be more than difficult. The loss of bipartisan agreement on climate policy will increase instability well into the future as governments take turns to flip-flop on the settings. This is on the Titanic, by the way, it would seem. It goes on to say that could prove costly in the long run. A joint report issued by the World Economic Forum and Boston Consulting Group highlights the costs of climate inaction. So it's not about taking action. We're getting so many inactions building around us that it can be running out of action steps if we don't watch ourselves. It calculates the financial penalties of a late chaotic transition to a zero emission world, estimating that the investment today in climate adaptation and mitigation will be repaid 5 to 6 times over in avoided loss and damage in the future. What part of that accounting equation doesn't the government understand? So this is completely at odds with the government's stated concerns about the transition costs for itself and businesses, and even more at odds with public well-being in the face of a rapidly worsening links risks from climate change. So there we have it. The government is going to COP30 now to do what it thinks it can do and just walk away from many of the commitments in the area of climate change. It's like walking away from on a sinking ship and not looking ahead what's coming up. Just in the last few hours, the Natural Peoples of the World staged major protests there because of the problem in not recognizing the rights of people who are bearing a brunt of that. Not the outside world, but the people right there. And let's see a bit of a balancing argument here, because the gentleman by the name of Michael Jacobs, who's the Professor of Political Economy, University of Sheffield, paints another picture. And it goes on to say about the question of, as delegates gathered at the Amazonian port of Belém, the familiar complaints have returned. The summits are too big, over bureaucratic, aren't making enough progress, and after 3 decades of annual conferences, global emissions are still rising, and critics say that the process is failing. But he says it misses the point. Emissions are rising much more slowly than they would have without the UN regime. 2009, it was said it might go to 6 degrees of warming. 2015, it was business as usual, would only come down to 4 degrees. And now the UN projects show, without additional policies, the world will warm around 2.5. Question is, where do these numbers sit? If you move the ends, it's almost possible to make ends meet. Whilst a steady decline has happened because, and contrary to popular belief, the world is actually acting on climate change. Over the past 15 years, the dramatically falling cost of renewable energy, particularly solar and wind, have led to an astonishing rise in the use. And this year or next, renewables will generate more electricity than coal for the first time. So we need to keep that in mind, and we'll cover this in another interview. Renewable electricity in the 2025 totaled 4,600 gigawatts, equal to the combined installed capacity of China, Europe, Union and Japan. So planet people, it is happening. It's how we sift through all the information that's coming to us. So I'm on the right side of solar. Let's go out with the climate action now and see you on the other side. Have a good one.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.